You're listening to the Bible for Normal People, the only God-ordained podcast on the internet. Serious talk about the sacred book. I'm Pete Enns.
And I'm Jared Bias.
Hey, welcome everybody to our final episode of season one of the Bible for Normal People podcast.
I thought this day would never come.
Yeah, no. You know what, Jared? The thing is, people said we'd never make it.
They did.
They said you can't do this. You're going to be horrible at it. You're no good. And I said, shut up, Mom.
That was just your family. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. We had the same joke. That's awesome.
The thing is that my mom has been dead for several years, but all kidding aside, she would have found that to be very funny.
That's great.
Good old mom.
Yeah.
I have my mom's sense of humor just much more twisted and unhealthy.
Today, we thought we would do a bit of a recap, but really answering, because we've noticed what we've said all throughout this podcast. The question that keeps coming back, or the two questions, are what is the Bible and what do we do with it?
And those questions never get old.
No.
For me, they don't get old for you, and they don't get old for people that we engage all the time, whether it's on on my blog, or just when we go out speaking, or certainly getting feedback from the podcast. People, you know, they want to keep asking that kind of question. It means a lot to them, but it's hard to know what to do with it sometimes. So it's a question that keeps on giving, I think.
Yeah. And so today, let's talk for about a half hour or maybe a little more and just see if we can come any closer to the answers to those questions and maybe try to incorporate some of the things we've learned over this season.
Yeah, because we had some themes that came through, I think, this season with, you know, a pretty wide variety of guests, I would say. Wouldn't you say, Jared?
I think wide variety within the niche of a Bible podcast. But
true. Yeah. Gee, Jared, we just killed the whole thing here. Yeah, true. But even within that, a pretty broad... We had people who thought differently about stuff.
We did. Yeah, absolutely.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
So why don't we jump into that? Why don't you just go ahead and, you know, in one sentence, why don't you answer us the question, what is the Bible?
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen. But, you know, what is the Bible? I appreciate a lot of our guests coming through and answering that question in their own way. And, you know, the one that stands out for me, one episode, and I'm not saying this is the best, but this is where I am with my brain and where the kinds of things I'm listening to now, was the episode with Ben Sommer and talking about, this was, you know, back I think in May or something, but talking about the nature of revelation and authority and inspiration in Judaism, and how different that is from how most Christians think about it, at least those Christians who think about things like inspiration and authority and revelation. And I just found that to be very freeing, that, you know, the Bible itself is so diverse, it is not itself the revelation, but it's an interpretation of the revelation. That is something that helps me understand what is the Bible.
And when you can maybe, I'm just trying to remember that, but if I remember too, it was for him, you know, what would we say is the revelation? Is it an experience with God? And then the Bible is sort of an attempt to translate that into words?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. It's an experience of God, maybe even an intuitive experience of God that you can't deny, this encounter with the Almighty, with the Creator, but that encounter does not give you a rule book. It gives you something that you're sort of left to be a co-creator of scripture, so to speak. That might not be the best way of putting it, but humans are certainly obviously involved in the production of the Bible. And it's sort of like left to the Israelites of old to put down into words their experience of God that, let's say, is initiated by God, but it's still their experience of God. So it's top down and bottom up at the same time. And I find that very Christian, if I may put it that way, because, you know, we've got this whole incarnation business that we deal with that is top down, but bottom up as well. And I find that a very realistic way of thinking about the Bible that isn't embarrassed by what are normally thought of as difficulties or problems with the Bible, like the Bible's diversity and its contradictions and its theological back and forth, even debate within its pages. And that's the kind of thing that I wish I had been taught from the very beginning to think, you know, that way about the Bible.
Yeah, it starts to get, when we think about that, I can just see a lot of people getting really nervous about that. And that makes me think of, I was actually on a podcast recently, a different podcast, and we ended up talking about...
That's like committing adultery.
I knew it. I knew, as soon as I said it, I thought, man, this is confession time.
Here in public, you're telling everybody, Jared, you're on... Hey, for your information, I was in another podcast yesterday, too. So there.
I did plug our podcast at the end. So at the end, I really missed this podcast and decided I wanted to come back to this podcast. but that just made me think, like, I just think if we accept that understanding of the Bible, of what the Bible is, that it's not a rule book and it's not this inerrant, drop down from heaven, scribed by God, rule book, then it actually changes a lot of other things that I'm thinking of, things like when in the Diana Butler Bass episode with the Wesleyan quadrilateral, or Richard Rohr, when he talked about it more as like a three-legged stool, or I think a tricycle, the Bible now gets situated in the larger human experience, because you can't just say the Bible is not this rule book that can be sufficient for everything you would ever need. You just have to read the Bible and that'll take care of everything. If you don't have that, then what else can you lean on? And I think that's where, you know, the quadrilateral that Diana Butler Bass talked about, which would be, okay, now we have to also take into account tradition and what the history of the church, or what we might say the Spirit of God through the history of the church is teaching us, as well as our own experience, as well as reason and using our brain. And all of that now has to work together. So I appreciated, with summer and thinking about what is revelation, what is the Bible, what is revelation, it also then kind of, if you have a different view of the Bible, then it kind of makes you also have a different view of things like tradition and experience. Right. So it all kind of ties together, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, those two ideas really, to me, work together beautifully. Summer's idea of we're interpreting the revelation, and this quadrilateral idea, because taking tradition seriously, you actually see how tradition changes and evolves, right? The church does not think the same way today that it did, let's say, 1700 years ago. reason and, you know, that changes as well over time, as does our experience. You know, we're people today situated in the 21st century, and it's not that it's more advanced, but it's just different, and we have different issues. We have different ways of looking at things. We have, a modern outlook. Again, that's not a value judgment. I think it's just a statement of fact. And the gospel has to be interpreted again in different times and different places. And that's our sacred responsibility. That's what I like about both of those pictures, that it's putting the burden on us in a good sense to take seriously the revelation in order to interpret it for our time and place.
Well, it kind of, like, as you're saying that, it problematizes the revelation. Mm. It makes it something we have to sit with, and we have to stew on, and we have to say, that's confusing. What did our forefathers think about that one? Let's read some church history. Let's look at the tradition. Oh, how does my experience might help me understand it? It's whenever it's such a a packaged, neat thing that's really easy to understand, that I think we can make a lot of mistakes in how we interpret it. But whenever we problematize it, whenever it's like, ooh, okay, now we have to interpret this because it's a revelation. It's an interpretation of a revelation already. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, like our recent guest Barbara Brown Taylor says, and then you have translation and transmission on top of that. It all gets very problematized, which I think, in, you know, when we think of Jewish ways of reading and Levinson and these guys were on, one of the things I really appreciated was it forces you to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And by problematize, I mean, we have to problem solve. We have to think about it. We have to sit with it. And the Bible itself, you know, when I think of wisdom literature and even the diversity in the text, it kind of forces that as well, where we have to engage and struggle with it. And there's something really nice about that.
Yeah, and if once you get over the hump, I think, of accepting what you just said, the Bible really becomes very interesting. And you can connect with it, I think, in a deeper level than this detached, sort of kept under a glass book that, you know, never changes and, you know, is just meant to be followed. Again, like that rule book metaphor we keep using, but I think it's a very apt metaphor for, I think, how some people struggle with the Bible. So, those were two, you know, really good ideas and important ideas. And I'm thinking of some other people we had on, too, that also talked. I mean, you mentioned Rohr and his tricycle metaphor. And if I remember right, the tricycle, the front wheel is our experience. That's the main wheel that drives everything. And I guess scripture is one of the other wheels. You need all three. But how we, this is to me such a commonsensical thing to say now, but I mean, I might not have said this 20, 30 years ago, but our experience actually drives how we read the Bible and what we get out of it.
Yeah. And I remember Richard Rohr saying, he basically said, we should just acknowledge that and admit it because it just, mm-hmm. it's just true. We just, you know, evangelical for me growing up, it was, we tried to deny that somehow we came to the text pure without experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, only, it really was a sin question. Like the only way you would distort your reading of the Bible with experience is if you had some like egregious sin that kept you from reading it in the plain sense of the text. So yeah, I appreciate those times when, because you know, I mean, I don't know if you know, but for me growing up, there were these things that like just intuitively felt a little disingenuous, mm-hmm. but you kind of look around and no one else is naming it, so you kind of fake it for a while.
Right.
And that's kind of one of those moments having Richard Rohr on where he just sort of is like, can we just name it? Like our experience, we lead with our experience and we interpret mm-hmm. the Bible in that, in light of our experience. And let's not make that a sin or a problem, but just a reality that we have to explore.
And if God exists, God can handle that, that we're people.
Right.
And we don't have to become omniscient or something to, in order to sort of grasp the presence of God in our lives. So, I think those are very liberating concepts, but it also, I mean, the way you just expressed what Rohr said, you know, to accept that you're it's hard to accept that within a paradigm like evangelicalism. And I'm just sort of, again, stating that as something of more of a fact than a value judgment. Because, you know, many of the people, as you know, Jared, who listen to us are people who are looking for different ways of thinking about the Bible. And if you go to where Rohr is already situated, you're looking at things from a very different point of view, and it's a different way of thinking about being Christian. That's like, you know, Brian McLaren would say, a new kind of Christian and a new kind of Christianity. It simply doesn't fit the mold of what many people are used to. And that's, you know, we've talked a lot about the psychological dimension to this. That's a big issue. That's a hard thing to get over. But many of our listeners and people who are with us on Patreon and all that sort of stuff, they're already there and they're looking for language as we have. New language for talking about this stuff.
Yeah, and maybe that's actually a great transition to, you know, we talked for the last, 15 minutes or so about what is the Bible, but I'm also interested as we go into season two, we may address this even more, but the question of what do we do with it now? Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, we have a lot of people who know what they don't want to do with the Bible, But that creative act of figuring out now how to find a renewed sense of interest in the Bible, or how do I read it differently? That's a, it takes a while. I mean, I think for me, it took years to even first have the desire to do that. And then secondly, have the tools to be able to do that in a new way. So, so maybe let's ask that question, you know, just in the same way that you had a perfect one sentence answer for what is the Bible. what do we do with it?
Oh boy, that's the harder question to answer. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Jared, that, you know, we can sort of talk about what is it and sort of deconstruct what you don't do with it. And again, I think that's part of the territory of those who have come out of, let's say, more restrictive theological or ecclesiastical backgrounds. You want to sort of fight against that. And you want to say what's wrong with that to feel liberated. But then the question eventually will come up, well, what do I do with this? And the way that I would put it now, and stay tuned, this may change a lot over the next 10 minutes or, you know, 10 years or whatever. But I think of the Bible as a book of wisdom, not as a book of rules or a book of information. There is information there. There are even what you might call rules there. But fundamentally, the Bible is a book of wisdom, which is about teaching us by our engagement of it to live well and to live in God's presence and to live well with each other. And wisdom is not something that's just handed to you. It's something that you have to experience, and it's something that you make stops and starts, and it's not easy. It's a life of triumphs and a life of failures, but a life of gaining wisdom and understanding as you go through life, which is a God thing, because, you know, God is wisdom, and God is, you know, almost personified as wisdom, at least in Second Temple Judaism, not so much in the Old Testament itself, but it becomes a very, very important concept. Like, this is it. This is the center of what it means to be connected to this creator. And I think the Bible's primary function is to show us what it means to be wise, which is means to be connected to the very character of God. That's more than a sentence.
It's okay. It was pretty good, so we'll allow it.
I appreciate it.
I think I might put it a little softer. I mean, I really want to come back to, you know, you talked about the Bible isn't the revelation of God, but it is a, I don't even know what the word we would use, a transcription of the revelation of God, or a translation of that. And I want to see something similar in like the wisdom part of the book, because, you know, when we think of our guests that we had on, like Naisha Jr. and particularly, who was it? Drew Hart,
yeah.
Where I think the Bible can function as a book that can make us wise. It can also function as a way to bring a division, or even to justify pretty harmful behaviors when we're talking about race and gender and some other things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I'm just, whenever you say it is fundamentally a book of wisdom, I would kind of want to back off of that a little bit and say it is a book that I think the Christian church can find really useful for the path toward wisdom or something like that. Of course, you know, my background is in philosophy, so I want it to be as vague as possible, but it is the path toward the beginning of possibly maybe a life of wisdom. So, you know, thinking about that, we have to translate it for our times and figuring out how that functions. I almost just think like sometimes we could make it a wisdom book almost function like a rule book. And right. I think it continues to resist that.
Right. Which I definitely don't want to do. And I think we overlap pretty significantly in how you're putting it. When I say the Bible is a wisdom book, it's not handing us bits of wisdom. It's actually modeling for us the responsibility of figuring it out.
Right.
And that's what I see that throughout the biblical story, Old and New Testament, pretty clearly. And I think that's the invitation. I think the Bible invites us to take the responsibility to be mature people.
Right.
And to take that responsibility of discerning and trying to understand what does it mean to believe in this God and to believe in this Jesus here and now? What does that look like? What does it look like when God shows up now? Because God is showing up through us. So what do we, see, that's where wisdom. Wisdom is very practical. What does it mean for this God to show up now through us? That is fundamentally a wisdom question. It's not a belief question. It's not a doctrine question. And again, I'm not against belief or against doctrine, but the Bible is not fundamentally about believing. The Bible is not fundamentally about doctrine. The Bible is fundamentally about wisdom. And that wisdom almost takes the control out of our hands in a sense, because it's not like this text you master and once you know it all, you've got it. That's just the beginning.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, in some of our background, I would say where that was problematic was sort of the belief that if you constructed the sandcastle just right, you could get it right. And then the goal was to like defend against anyone getting near your sandcastle instead of like, because if you mess with it, you could topple this whole thing down.
Right.
Instead of saying that fortress wasn't really the point, it's about walking the journey. It's not about building anything necessarily.
And if you do build it, you have to build it far enough from the water so it never touches anything. So
right.
it's just this artificial, structure to it. So
how would that, and this is just a curious question, I'm thinking you've wrestled with this a little bit more than I have probably of the Bible, more as a wisdom book rather than a belief book. But the first thing that jumped into my head was something like, the Gospel of John, where late in the book, he sort of lays it out there, I think in chapter 20, saying, I've written this so that you might believe. Like this is the purpose of why I'm writing it, so that you can believe. And how does that fit with this idea? Is it the New Testament swings a little more toward belief than say the Hebrew Bible would, or does belief mean something a little different maybe in that context than just a mental assent to a correct idea?
Well, maybe all those things. I mean, when I say the Bible's fundamentally about wisdom, I don't mean exclusively about wisdom. It does talk about other kinds of things.
Right.
But even there, you know, I think the word belief there, like we see most of the time in the New Testament, is an active life of trusting God, not an intellectual assent to something. And when you're talking about a life of trusting God, you're smack dab in the middle of wisdom.
Right.
Not in the world of doctrine or just like an intellectual belief. But I do think, you know, since you brought it up, Jared, I do think that this is one reason why we need the Old Testament theologically, because it does lay some of these things out in a little bit more depth than the New Testament does, because just the nature of the animal of the New Testament, it's written over a fairly constricted period of time. Let's say roughly about maybe 50 years or even less. And it's more triumphal. And we're not going to be here much longer because things are going to end and Jesus is going to come back. That's most New Testament writers thought of an imminent parousia, as they call it, an imminent return of Jesus. And so, you know, the act of living a long life and going old and living a life of wisdom and mastering life, so to speak, and being able to navigate the ups and downs. You know, in the Old Testament, you have hundreds and hundreds of years of people thinking about what does it mean to be an Israelite, because there's no second coming. You know, there's no triumphal moment, during the Old Testament, except for these, you know, long-distance eschatological moments. But in the New Testament, it's more like everything's eschatological. Everything's coming to an end soon. So the emphasis is different. You know, so I mean, I expect the New Testament maybe to have different angles on it, you know, about not wavering in unbelief, like James puts it, you know, even though that's a wisdom book itself. I don't think that cancels out some of the emphasis of wisdom that we see so dominant, especially in the Old Testament.
Right.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
So, what other things can we say about what we do with the Bible?
Well, you brought up Nisha Jr. and Drew Hart, for example, on womanist interpretation and then race in the Bible. And I remember especially Drew really, he sort of helped us understand how what we need is creative readings of the Bible that help marginalized peoples. And what do you do with the Bible? Well, that's one thing that we do. It's appropriating the text and speaking truth through the text, even by accenting stories that might be buried and not used very often, or looking at things from a different angle, from a fresh angle. And I mean, that's a lot of what's behind, you know, feminist interpretation and other types of interpretation that try to and I think as needed are successful in putting sort of, if I could put it this way, white male theology in its place, where, you know, that's sort of normal and all these other things are just sort of like, you know, not taking the text seriously or making things up in the text with biases and that sort of thing. But all interpretive stances have biases. All interpretive stances come from a particular angle. And I think what Drew Hart is reminding us of is how we have that responsibility too, that all of us have to be creative in engaging the text. And so when you see people who are marginalized or harmed by the Christian faith or by the use of scripture, our responsibility is to go back to it and to look at it to see what can be mined out of it that helps people.
Right. Yeah. Another way of saying that for me is, unfortunately, there's no default way of reading the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the really unfortunate thing is over the last at least few hundred years, we've assumed that the default way of reading the Bible is the white male,
mm-hmm.
maybe even Americanized way of reading the Bible, mm-hmm. and that we're not taking into account how blind we are to sort of our own biases with that. And I think one that pointed out that really well for me was Megan DeFranza. Yes. Talking about intersex and the believer in the Bible and just these texts that I really had not paid much attention to and how she animated them now in light of intersex peoples, intersex believers, and even maybe how it relates to transgender people as well. And yeah, that was just one
like
of those,
the eunuch in Matthew,
right.
Or in the book of Acts, right?
Yeah, and how, you know, it's hard to, you know, I think what I wanted to name is it's not really our fault. We don't want to have a lot of value judgment placed on the fact that we read the Bible in certain ways, in the sense that it just, how many different ways can you approach the text kind of in one lifetime? It's more of being open to it when it comes your way and just saying, yeah, I would have never thought of that. I would have never picked up on that. Which also maybe is a reason why getting out and rubbing shoulders with and having good conversations with Christians who aren't like you, you know, there's something really important there.
As we're trying to do on this podcast.
Indeed.
Yeah, and, you know, I think of Megan and also Matthew Vines and, you know, God and the Gay Christian, but also here with The Bible and the Gay Christian, which I think was the title of our podcast, is looking at texts that are not always front and center in some discussions and looking at other texts and saying, you know what, there are other actually very legitimate and defensible readings of some of these texts that are not part of, let's say, the dominant culture, but are still not just viable or possible readings, but sometimes very strong readings and ones that can be defended. And you know, when you get into that, it gets a little bit messy because you want the Bible to be clear. But the fact of the matter is that it's not always clear, and it doesn't always tell you what to do. And I continue to think, by listening to some of these guests that we've had, like Matthew Vines and Megan DeFranza and Drew Hart and Nisha Jr. and a bunch of others, that, you know, that's something that's good about the Bible, that it resists a monolithic interpretation. It, by its nature, it invites different interpretations because of its ambiguities, because of its antiquity. You know, it's not speaking our language and it's not answering our questions. So when we go to it with our questions, we have to be aware of the fact that it may not be prepared to answer those questions specifically. We have to do some creative theological thinking. It's never just about reading the Bible. It's about the theology that's surrounding that. And if that theology is wise and connected with people and is really focused on loving God and loving your neighbor, you know, I think something good could come out of that.
Well, I think that's an important thing when we talk about, you know, what is the Bible and what do we do with it? Well, if the Bible isn't this rule book that is just plainly, that can be plainly read by anybody and everything is just really clear if you read it, it often the question I get is sort of like, well, then what is the proper lens through which we read it? Because if we're always reading it through a lens, what's the proper way? And I think that's tied to what we do with it. And you mentioned a few times that finding readings that cause no harm. And even more than that, it just reminded me of St. Augustine in his book on Christian doctrine, I think it is, where he has this great quote where he says that if anyone thinks that they understand the scriptures, but they put up such an interpretation that doesn't tend to build up love of God and love of neighbor, actually doesn't understand them as they should. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of St. Augustine, which is 400. This isn't like a liberal or progressive idea in the modern sense, but, you know, 1600 years ago, St. Augustine basically says, yeah, we understand you could read the Bible in a lot of different ways. So how do we know when we hit the right one? And already St. Augustine's saying, well, here's a good one. If it doesn't build up your love of God or your neighbor, it's probably not the right one.
And he lived at a time when it was understood and even celebrated that the Bible is, quote, not clear. It is open to different interpretations, and you have to struggle with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I don't know who it was. You may know your patristics better than me. But, you know, at that time back then, it was, I remember one of them saying that the literal interpretation or the one on the face of things is the least interesting.
Yeah.
It's sort of the least mature one.
It's origin.
Origin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
First century. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's not only affirming.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to settle for that, I guess that's okay.
Right.
Yeah, seriously, that's sort of the attitude, but there's like, that's not where God is actually doing most of the talking. It's in those deeper levels that are not bound to things like the original meaning of an author or the contextual sense. Now, of course, a lot of the church rebelled against that, and not many people are sort of, quote, allegorizers nowadays, but the principle is still an important one, and somebody had to say it, you know, that the heart of it is not just the surface meaning of words on a page in front of you. It's actually the meaning you give to those words. That's really what makes this sing. And I think that can be frightening to some people, but you know, I found it to be very, very liberating. It's not just the words, it's how we understand the words that make this authoritative scripture for us.
Right. And something you mentioned quite a bit throughout this season is that how did you put it? When we talk about the Bible itself actually models this for us. And I think that was an important point you kept making, is it's not like we're adding something onto the text and saying, well, that's clear. And it just happens to be that we've kind of lost that. And so now we have to make up new meanings. It's no, we find it in the text that they're reinterpreting older traditions. And we can see that, whether that's the two creation stories or whether that's how Chronicles reinterprets the King's narrative, or, you know, a lot of John Levinson's work, who we had on, where he does that in just really interesting ways. I remember he does the section on child sacrifice where it's like this interpretation in the text, this development in the text on this topic. And so the Bible itself models it. And that's important to name too, I think, for those who want to say, well, there, you know, interpretation is what we do after the Bible, and then the Bible is this non-interpretive thing. That's just not true.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Rock. Rockt. Der neue T-Rock.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 Euro pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
Yeah, and what is the New Testament if not a tectonic rethinking of a lot of cherished categories? And this is why Paul had a hard sell. You know, he had to try to sell to the Mediterranean world that this Jewish God is also for Gentiles every bit as much as this God is for Jews. And you know, it's not, and A.J. Levine, for example, will always remind us, and correctly so, that the Old Testament's not, quote, against Gentiles. But there was still a notion in Second Temple Judaism that there was some sort of a conversion that happens when Gentiles become Jews. And when they're all in with the Jewish family, and one of those things is circumcision, another one is really adopting the laws of Judaism and basically doing the best you can. But, you know, with Paul, the dietary restrictions and circumcision are marginalized and they're decentered. They're not those things that are central to what it means to be part of the family of Abraham. And that's a pretty, that's a significant moment, I think, you know, in the history of Judaism, this Christian movement that started in the first century. And, you know, we have to remember that within our own Bible, the whole gospel depends on a reinterpretation of Israel's story. Without that, you don't have the gospel.
Right. Yeah. And
that's scary for people.
Yeah. I think a lot of traditions do a disservice by trying to smooth all of that over. You know, whenever it's Matthew quotes Hosea, "Out of Egypt I have called my son," and we look at that and, you know, for me, I would have never questioned it. It's like, well, of course, Hosea was talking about Jesus, and that's really clear. Well, do it just a little bit of scratching the surface of that, and you realize Hosea is not talking about Jesus, but talking about Israel. And so, wait, now how does Matthew get there? Well, he gets there this creative rereading, this reinterpretation. In light of this experience, to kind of come back full circle, the revelation of God, the experience that the author of the community had of Jesus, we have to make sense of this somehow.
You miss the theology if you miss this drama, so to speak, that is happening in the New Testament and then, you know, within the Old Testament and then moving to the New Testament period. And that's, you know, you really do miss what they're saying when you flatten it out and say it all. Everybody's sort of on the same page, you know, like the Old Testament, you know, Hosea is clearly predicting Jesus. That sort of flattens it out. But by saying, well, he's clearly not. In fact, Matthew's doing something weird with this passage. Okay, well, let's talk about the weirdness. Like Richard Rohr, let's name it for what it is. Call it weird. And now let's try to dig into the writer's theology a bit. And you know, that takes a lot of work and it can be a little bit unsettling and uncomfortable, but that's where the payoff is really looking at this stuff. And I, you know, I can't help but think you mentioned Augustine and I threw Origen in there. So, you know, these early church people, they were much more on board with that notion than, let's say, much of the Protestant Reformation tradition that we're a part of that has, you know, maybe been less comfortable with multiplicity of meanings. You don't have fourfold meaning of scripture like you have in the medieval period, like a moral meaning, a literal meaning, then a Christological meaning and sort of what you might call an eschatological meaning. Where's all this going? Where's the future? It sort of was flattened out to one way of looking at it, more or less a historical way. And I think we miss something of the very nature of the Bible itself. And maybe this is sort of summing up the point here. You know, what is the Bible and what do we do with it? Answering one question right away brings you to the other. You know, it's like when you look at how people have understood the Bible, including within the Bible itself, it can't help but force you to look at, well, what is the Bible then? You know, if the church has used it in such diverse ways, and even within the Bible itself, if it exhibits such diversity, what is the Bible? And what do we do with it? And, you know, my answer to the second question now gets a little bit easier. What do we do with it? Well, we follow that pattern in a godly, humble way. How should we be thinking about God now, given our circumstances and our place in time and history?
Right. And I think that, yeah, that humility is so important because, you know, the flip side of the certainty, the nice thing about having it all buttoned up is you don't really need humility because it's there. You're pretty certain about it. And so, again, like, I think there's multiple instances we can point to in the Bible that lifts up humility as a good thing. And it's almost like the Bible itself is humbling us. Every time you sort of try to put your finger on it, it sort of escapes the grasp. And I think that also points to this dynamic way of reading the Bible, that it's not meant to just be words on a page, but it's meant to cause a struggle. And, you know, I would just say one of the things that kept coming back is I love the, you know, a lot of our Jewish guests and their ability to just name, yeah, it's part of the struggle. The struggle is the point. And, you know, for a lot of our listeners, I think the struggle brought a lot of pain, and it brings a lot of isolation and alienation because the church isn't set up for that. Where for Jewish communities, that is the point, and they get that. So it can be actually a joyful time to debate and argue because you're not going to be alienated from your community and you're not going to be shamed for having different interpretations, but it is part of the process. And that took that away from this season, and want to continue to encourage the communities I'm part of to, you know, adopt that posture.
Right. Well, and with that, Jared, we could talk all night about this.
We could.
We had like 25 guests, you know, that something like that.
I know we just spent
glancing through the list.
We just name dropped a lot in this episode.
I know, but we didn't name drop everybody.
I know, but it felt really good to name drop because it was appropriate.
That's true. That's true.
You know, it was good. We got it all out in one episode. I don't think we name dropped it all in the other episodes. So.
That's true.
Excellent. Do you have any final words
for us? Get ready for season two.
Get ready. How might one get ready for season two, Pete?
Fast.
Don't have fun. What I was expecting.
Go have fun. Just go be a person, and then we'll see you when season two begins, which is, do we have a start date for that yet, Jared?
We do.
People want to know.
We do. I would say it. Let's keep it broad and say end of January, beginning of February.
Right. It's around that time.
Yep.
Right. So
we got to take a break. This is hard work.
It is. It's fun work, but it's hard work. I know. And we've got a real exciting lineup. We have a fair amount of season two planned already.
We do.
Yeah, I think that's really amazing, but we're not going to tell anybody who our guests are.
No, maybe if a few folks would want to join Patreon, I think we could probably sneak some looks of season two in the coming weeks.
Patreon.
So with that, just another plug for this community of faith, which, I've got about a few hundred people. Now joining the Patreon community, having these discussions on the Slack group, there's a lot of great discussions happening there. Everything from the Bible and violence, the being able to teach our children the Bible. There's even one now on giving feedback about the podcast. I don't read that one.
I just ignore that one completely. Yeah. I don't need feedback.
Exactly.
Yeah, who needs feedback? Yeah.
But just encourage you to
Jesus
check that
didn't
out.
Take feedback. I don't think he did.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so check that out. And in the meantime, I think while you're waiting, go check out Patreon, join the conversation, and we'll see you in a month or so.
Yeah, sounds good.
See you later.
Righty, folks. Thanks for everything. See ya.